Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
You brush your teeth every day, but do you do it properly? With Quip, you get a better electric toothbrush that's designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and enjoyable. The Quip toothbrush has a built-in 2-minute timer that pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides. It has a multi-use cover that mounts to your mirror for on-the-go brushing. And Quip brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. It has thousands of verified 5-star reviews, and it's one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association. I love Quip because the sonic vibrations are gentle on my sensitive gums. That's why I love Quip and why they're backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/coldcase right now, you get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/coldcase. On October 15th, 2004, at her home in Santee, California, Phyllis New was shot in the head at close range. 911 received a call from her husband, Bill, at 4:02 in the morning, reporting her injuries.
911 emergency.
Yes, somebody broke into my house.
Are they there right now?
No. My wife's really hurt. She's bleeding. Oh my God. How do we just gone for a little while? I drove to Rite Aid and to get her some migraine medicine.
Just give me a rough estimate how long you were gone. 30 minutes?
Maybe 30 minutes.
From A&E, this is Cold Case Files. I'm Brooke, and here's the distinguished Bill Curtis with a classic case, A Deadly Pattern.
The reporting party, who was the husband, had supposedly left his house to get his wife some medication. And when he returned to his home, he found that someone had broken into his home and murdered his wife during the 30 minutes that he was gone.
San Diego County Sheriff's Detective Pat Gardner heads to the crime scene.
Basically, the only room that was involved was the room that Phyllis New was found in. She was found deceased, lying in her bed, close gunshot wound to the back of her head. It appeared that she had been murdered in her bed as she slept.
The detective follows up with paramedics, who had responded to the scene 4 minutes after Mr. New's 911 call.
Arrived on scene, declared Phyllis New deceased at the home, and noticed that the shower showed signs of lividity and rigor mortis.
Deputy Medical Examiner Dr. Stephen Campman reviews the paramedics' findings.
It was his opinion that she had been dead for at least a couple hours, that he felt rigor mortis in her face and maybe an arm, and that he saw some color changes, lividity of her body, that let him know that, in his experience, that she'd been dead for some time.
Rigor mortis, the stiffening of the body, and lividity, the settling of blood in the body, are used to determine approximate time of death.
It generally takes a couple hours to be very visible. So that it could be seen at 4 a.m. suggested that she'd been dead, a couple hours.
According to Mr. New, however, his wife was killed by an intruder approximately 30 minutes before paramedics arrived. Detective Gardner finds time of death isn't the only inconsistency at the crime scene.
Present inside the home was a very large freestanding jewelry box. It had 8 drawers total and then 2 vertical drawers on the side. And basically only 3 of those drawers had been disturbed. And the very top ones, the rest were completely full of jewelry, and that appeared very unusual. My gut tell me that there were some serious problems from looking at that home, that it did not appear to be a residential burglary slash murder. The shot basically appeared to be an execution style shot. That's something you don't see normally in a home invasion.
While Gardner continues processing the scene for evidence, Bill New is taken downtown for more questions.
We knew at that point he was the only person that was in the house with her at the time around the time that she died. So he's the one we need to start with.
Sheriff's Detectives Richie Han and Sharon Lunsford sit down with Bill New and ask where he was on the day his wife was murdered.
Well, I got home on the later side because I had gone over to office team in La Jolla to talk to them.
About a job?
Yeah.
So what kind of a mood was she in when she got home? Everything okay?
Yeah. She made herself a sandwich. And we watched Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, and she fell asleep.
Later that night, Bill New says his wife woke up with a migraine.
I said, do you want me to get you an Imitrax? And she said, no, I've taken too many of those. I need something else. I said, do you want me to go to the store? And she said, yes.
New says he doesn't know what time Phyllis woke him up or what time he returned home.
He said that it probably took him, he was guessing, about 15 minutes to get there, maybe as much as 15 minutes in the store, he wasn't sure, and then maybe, you know, another 15 minutes to get home. That's why I said we're looking at a time frame of maybe half hour to an outside of 45 minutes that he was gone.
And I flipped the light switch on in the hall, and the dresser drawers were open. So I moved a little quicker, and she was on her side. I put my hand on her arm, and I saw the blood on the pillow. I just came.
He exited the room and then proceeded to use the phone in the other room. Never gave her first aid, even when the dispatcher came on the line and offered assistance, you know, check her. He didn't check her. Never went back into that room.
Detectives ask about the state of the News marriage.
Talk to me about your relationship with Phyllis, between the two of you. How's your relationship?
It's good. I mean, We've had ups and downs. Yeah.
We asked him, you know, had they had any problems, and he said, well, you know, everyone has their problems, but there was nothing significant in their relationship that, you know, wasn't out of the norm for a married couple to have disagreements. Nothing serious.
After 3 hours, detectives end the interview, and New is free to go. Meanwhile, Detective Gardner has been canvassing neighbors near the crime scene.
A witness came forward who said that on Thursday night that Phyllis had come over to her home upset over the fact that she and Mr. New had gotten into an argument over him possibly not working.
My first thought was that SOB, he did something, because she caught him in a lie. She had backed him into a corner finally. She had finally confronted him that this was it.
Carol Espinoza is Phyllis New's friend and neighbor.
She just started crying and saying that Bill's been lying again about his so-called current job. She had called apparently the agency that hired him, the temp agency, and they had never heard of him. So then she confronted him and told him that she was going to follow him to work the next morning, and he'd better produce a pay stub or a time card where she had had it.
10 hours after confronting her husband, Phyllis New was dead.
Well, that information was critical for the case in regards to Phyllis, due to the fact it contradicted what Bill originally told the first team of investigators that interviewed him.
The information is relayed to detectives back at the station, who bring Bill New in for a second round of questioning. This time, the gloves are off.
I need to talk to Bill, the real Bill, and I need you to tell me what went wrong in that house that night.
My first thought was Bill had something to do with this.
3 hours after learning of her friend Phyllis New's murder, Carol Espinoza tells detectives to take a hard look at Phyllis's husband, Bill.
Because I felt she had pushed him into a corner and gave him an ultimate on, you know, this is it. I'm not carrying you any longer.
The night before the homicide, Phyllis had confided in Espinoza.
She had called the temp agency where he was working, and they had never heard of him. So she said, well, then I'll be following you to work tomorrow, and you better produce a pay check or a time card, or I've had it.
The case will continue after this short break. Getting birth control is a hassle. You should be able to get it when and where you need it, without judgment. 10 million women in the U.S. know the struggle is real. That's why Hers is here to level the playing field. Go to forhers.com/coldcase to get your first month of birth control for just $5. Hers is helping women across the country get convenient and affordable access to birth control. They provide access to licensed doctors online who can evaluate you and, if appropriate, prescribe you birth control that can be delivered directly to your door. Hers offers 10 well-known birth control options and bundles the cost of receiving your birth control into one low price of $30 without the need for insurance. Get your first month of birth control from forhers.com/coldcase for just $5 right now while supplies last and subject to doctor approval. Restrictions apply. See the website for full details. That's forhers.com/coldcase. forhers.com/coldcase.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger, host of the not-so-creatively titled Jordan Harbinger Show. We dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers, and then we deliver them to you right into your ears. It's more than just a way to get inspired, and I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint and include worksheets for every episode, as well as answer your listener questions so you can live what you listen. Listen free to the Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
Make sure to stick around after this podcast to get the latest headlines from the AP News Minute.
The police become suspicious when they learn that Bill New had been lying to them since their investigation into his wife, Phyllis's, death. They no longer question him as a grieving husband, but instead interrogate him as they would a suspect.
We just need to get a couple of things a little bit clearer. Okay?
Okay.
Armed with Espinosa's information, San Diego County Sheriff's Detectives Sharon Lunsford and Richie Han sit down with Bill New for the second time in less than 7 hours.
So yesterday afternoon, you went to the temp agency.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, have you worked for them at all? Have you done jobs for them?
No.
She was a little upset about him not working, and he had possibly been lying about having jobs when he didn't.
Bill, what happened when you got home and you talked about that?
I told her that I wasn't working, and she got upset, and she cried. She doesn't get loud or anything like that, and...
What else happened? What happened, Bill?
Nothing happened. We talked and we talked and we talked.
And she told you that she wasn't going to put up with that anymore, didn't she?
No. She said that she was going to see that I got some help.
Did something go wrong in that house last night? And did you wind up doing something that you would never dream of doing in a million years? Did something happen? Did you hurt Phyllis, Bill?
No. 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 I told you. The only thing that I didn't tell you was about the temp agency.
Bill New denies any involvement in his wife's death. Detectives lean in and continue to turn the screws.
Nobody broke into your house. You need to tell us what happened.
What do you mean nobody broke into my house?
Why don't you tell me what happened between you and Phyllis last night?
I told you what happened.
After nearly 2 hours in the hot seat, New begins to shut down.
I gotta eat something to eat. I am just...
Okay.
I am shaky. I don't know what to do.
Detectives end the interview, and Mr. New is free to go. This time, however, he walks out of the police station knowing there's a bullseye on his back and a team of detectives who believe him to be a killer. Nancy Friend has known Phyllis New for 16 years. A week after the murder, Friend remembers a conversation she and Phyllis had years earlier about Bill New.
She says his first wife died when she was 8 months pregnant. And that kind of threw me, and I said, well, what happened? She goes, well, Bill was cleaning a gun. It fell and discharged, and hit her across the room. And the hair on my arm stood up. I got goosebumps all over my whole body thinking, you know, this didn't sound right.
Nancy phones San Diego detectives and tells them her story.
I said, my name's Nancy Friend. I've known Phyllis a number of years, and you do know that he killed his first wife. There was dead silence on the other end of the phone, and the first thing he said to me was, how do you know this? I said, well, Phyllis told me.
San Diego County Sheriff's Detective Pat Gardner reviews Bill News' police interview.
Had you been married before?
Yes.
Do you have children, any children from these original...
My first wife passed away, and my second wife, we got divorced.
What was your first wife's name?
Her name was Somsri Tasuri. She was from Thailand. I met her when I was overseas.
Oh, my gosh. What was the cause, if you don't mind me asking?
It was an automobile accident.
Gosh.
Just hours after the murder, Bill New had told police his first wife died in an automobile accident, a statement that now appears to be a lie.
Then I also received additional information that she died from a supposed accidental shooting. Did any of that information ever get brought up to you?
An accidental shooting? No, absolutely not. He was very clear that this was an automobile accident, nothing more.
Lead Detective Pat Gardner believes he might have the leverage he needs to crack Bill New and decides to confront his suspect.
Actually, I figured the best way for me to do it was to call him on the telephone, and that's what I did.
What was your first wife's name, sir?
Her name was Somsri, and she passed away in an accident.
What type of accident was that, sir?
I really don't want to go into all that. I really don't. I'm just beside myself here.
You can't tell me what type of accident it was?
No, I don't want to talk about that.
I was told that the accident was an auto accident, and then I was also told that the accident was an accidental shooting accident. Can you just let me at least know that?
Okay. It was an accidental shooting, but my mom and dad, decided that they were going to just tell everybody that it was an auto accident. I was cleaning a rifle and I dropped it and I grabbed it when it fell and it went off and she was struck.
He finally admitted that he had shot her during a gun cleaning accident.
What type of weapon, what type of rifle was that?
I don't remember.
Oh my gosh, where did it hit her at?
You know, I don't know that.
You don't know where she was struck at?
No.
Well, it's pretty unusual that if you would shoot your wife, you wouldn't know the facts of the shooting. I mean, this is your wife that you supposedly had shot, and so that seems suspicious.
Through the Department of Vital Statistics, Gardner locates a 1973 death certificate for Somsri New in San Bernardino, California.
And then I called San Bernardino Police Department, and I spoke with Detective Dave Dillon.
Okay, we're getting ready to go into the Identification Bureau at the Police Department.
San Bernardino Detective Dave Dillon learns that in 1973, the Somsri New case was determined to be an accidental death.
So here in the ID Bureau, for all our murders or death investigations, we maintain photographs or negatives.
Detectives find 26 old negatives from the Somsri New crime scene. They are the only remaining pieces of evidence in the case.
So what I asked them to do after that was blow them up to 8x10s, which told me another story about what happened at the scene.
The photos tell Detective Dillon the story of a cold case that original detectives got wrong.
I look at this, and I saw that the blood spatter did not match with the trajectory of the bullet. Blood spatter had traveled to the back of the wall, which was not consistent with the bullet path. The bullet path had gone back out this way, and in fact, everything was this way.
According to Dillon, the photos show that Somsri New could not have been shot the way Mr. New explained.
Based on my experience in homicide and having spent so much time there, I thought and felt that this was in fact a murder. I just did not feel comfortable saying this was a death investigation.
I went over to the crime lab, and I gave them the photographs and the reports, and I asked them to do a crime scene reconstruction and have then make their own determination scientifically on what the Samsir News shooting was.
It had to be a contact, as if somebody was standing over her, pointing the gun down towards her, placing it on the back of the head, and then discharging the weapon.
Both wives were sleeping, both wives shot in the back of the head. There was many similarities. When you laid them out side by side to how his MO was, they were very strikingly similar.
In 2004, Phyllis New was shot and killed, according to her husband Bill, by a random intruder. 31 years before that, Mr. New shot and killed his first wife, Samsri, while allegedly cleaning his gun. The coincidence makes Detective Pat Gardner uncomfortable. He decides to consult an expert.
So what we did was we flew out and saw Dr. Vincent DeMaio, and we presented the case to him.
Now, the weapon in this case was a .44 Magnum carbine.
Dr. Vincent DeMaio is an expert in the field of ballistics and gunshot wounds. He reviews evidence from the accidental shooting of Samsri New, along with Bill New's statement from 1973.
According to the husband, he was sitting on the couch, and he started to get up where he was doing something at that time, and the gun fell from his hand, and he grabbed it in midair, and it accidentally discharged.
DeMaio has immediate suspicions about Mr. New's story.
It'd be awful hard to drop this gun and get your finger in the trigger guard and put pressure on it, because you need not only for it to get in, but it's got to also fire the weapon. On top of that, if he's sitting down and the weapon slips from him, the bullet would have to have traveled in an upward direction to a head. However, the bullet, after entering the head and exiting the face, then went into the back of the couch and into the wall behind it in a downward trajectory. So actually, the overall trajectory of the bullet was into the head, through the face, through the back of the couch, into the wall, which is not consistent with his account where the bullet would have had to have been going upward.
In addition to the inconsistent trajectory, DeMaio sees a problem with the gunshot wound that killed Samsri New.
This wound was a huge stellate wound on the head, and there was also a large gaping exit wound of the left side of the face. And this suggests that at the time the deceased was shot, the muzzle of the gun was in contact with the head.
According to Mr. New's statement, however, he accidentally shot Samsri from a distance of 6 feet.
It could not have occurred the way he said it did. This injury, was that from a contact wound? And the individual had to be standing at the time the weapon was fired, pointing downward.
Basically, they were executed. The muzzle of the gun was right up to the head when the shot was fired.
In light of Dr. DeMaio's findings, Assistant DAs Kurt Meckles and Jill Lindbergh review both of Detective Gardner's cases.
I mean, the most obvious similarity is the fact that we're both Samsri and Phyllis were the defendant's wives. Both of them were shot in the home. Both were shot at nighttime in the home. And both were shot in the back of the head. Not just in the back of the head, but the trajectories were almost identical.
Another similarity lies in Mr. New's possible motive for killing both of his wives.
I mean, he stood to gain, and ultimately his son did get $800,000 in life insurance from the 2004 murder of Phyllis. And back in 1973, he collected $15,000, which doesn't sound like a lot now. But if you use present value of money, that was more than $66,000 to a young man back in 1973.
That's a lot of money back then.
Right.
In April of 2005, Bill New is charged with the murder of Samsri New and the murder of Phyllis New. The district attorney's office decides to try both cases together.
You can't separate these two cases. Even if San Bernardino had tried the 1973 case and we tried the 2004 case down here in San Diego, the evidence would have been cross-admissible. because of the similarities, because you could show that the same person did this.
Bill New's trial opens in February of 2006. After a month of testimony, he is found guilty of murdering both of his wives, one in 2004, the other 31 years earlier.
Mr. New, it is the judgment of this court that probation be denied in this case. Of course, you are.
4 weeks after the verdict, Bill New is sentenced.
And I'm not exactly sure even how to describe this sentence when it gets down to the total. But it is life plus 5 years and a consecutive term of life without the possibility of parole plus 25 years to life for the total of a very long time.
We're here to support her. We're here to support the verdict. We were happy with the verdict.
Outside the courtroom, a group of women gather. Phyllis New's friends, here to honor her memory.
It's a heartbreaker because we all knew her. It's just a sad situation that something like that should have to happen. But I believe, and I think we all believe, that he was guilty and that he is getting his just desserts now.
Despite several attempts at appeal, Bill New is still incarcerated in California. The state of California's inmate locator lists his current location as treatment for substance abuse. He's currently 71 years old.
This was one of Phyllis New's favorite places, the Wagon Wheel Saloon. A place to dance, to laugh, and most of all, to live.
Everybody was a friend to her. The first time she met you, you just felt like you were welcomed.
On a Thursday evening, Phyllis's friends gather at the Wagon Wheel to celebrate her life and cherish the memories.
I think of her out there on the floor, and she always would shine. You know, and you'd see her out there smiling and happy. And that's the way that I like to remember her. Probably looking down and smiling at us like she always smiled at us. So we just want to say, Phyllis, we love you and we miss you. And God bless. Cheers.
Cold Case Files, the podcast, is hosted by Brooke Giddings. Produced by McKamey Lynn and Steve Delamater. Our executive producer is Ted Butler. Our music was created by Blake Maples. This podcast is distributed by Podcast One. The Cold Case Files TV series was produced by Curtis Productions and is hosted by Bill Curtis. Check out more Cold Case Files at aetv.com or learn more about cases like this one by visiting the A&E Real Crime blog at aetv.com/realcrime.